is just a matter of catching up to him. I know that. Dalton knows that. Feeling it, though, is another matter. Brent said he got my gun away from Brady, and he's right. It's there, hidden in the grass. I see nothing at the crime scene to contradict Brent's version of events. Not that he'd deliberately mislead us, but maybe he misunderstood. Maybe I'll find something that proves the gunshot wasn't an accidental discharge.
What would prove that?
Dalton says when I admit what I'm hunting for. I have no idea, but I want it. He wisely says nothing and just lets me keep scouring. Brady is still culpable, I say. He held Brent at gunpoint. Whatever happens after that, it's still murder, even if it's second degree.
It is.
And he ground his fist in the injury. I don't care how desperate he was to find Jacob. That's sadistic.
It is.
I crouch and stare at the bloodied ground.
You want proof he's exactly what his stepfather says,
Dalton says.
Proof Brady is more than what he claims. A desperate man driven to desperate measures.
Yes. I want justification for my rage. I do want to see Brady gutshot for this. Gutshot and left in the forest. And that scares me. It's the sort of thing Matthias would do. And I tiptoe around the truth of what Matthias is, alternately repelled and not attracted. Definitely not. But there's part of me that thinks of what he does and nods in satisfaction. I could not do it, but it doesn't horrify me nearly as much as it should.
I should have come out last night,
Dalton says. I look up at him as I stay crouched.
I decided not to come see him last night. I waited until morning.
I rise and walk to him. Doesn't matter. This happened at twilight. We wouldn't have made it here before Brent got shot. Dalton says nothing, and I know that will weigh on him. Like my poor choices with Val weigh on me. We haven't discussed that yet. It's not time. Not time for this, either, as he pats Storm and then peers into the forest.
Should see if she can find Brady's trail.
She can't. The blood seems too much for her. It's upsetting or confusing, and she grows increasingly anxious until I release her from the task. Next, we try to catch up with Jacob, while continuing to search for Brady and Val. We put up the markers, telling Jacob we need to speak to him. There's no way to warn him otherwise. Despite Dalton's best efforts, Jacob is functionally illiterate. Their parents taught them the language of the forest, the one they needed to know. I get the sense that Dalton had learned how to read and write before he came to Rockton, but presumably he sought that teaching from his parents, and Jacob had not. We head to the cabin Tyrone Cipher has been using as a base. There's no sign of him. We leave a note, though I'm not sure that will do any good either. Cipher can read. He just might choose not to. Back in Rockton, there's been no word from the council. Petra and Diana have been taking turns with the radio. We aren't even sure how often they make contact with Val. Maybe, with us being pissed off over our unwanted prisoner, they'll just wait until we call and hope we don't. The search for Brady and Val didn't stop while we were off with Brent. We joined that, and by the time we return home, it's after 9 at night. Dalton and I are exhausted. We have one more task, though. Kenny has been in the cell over 24 hours, as Dalton lets him stew. We need to talk to him, as much as we're both dreading it. Kenny was the first true Rockton resident I'd met, my first taste of what to expect in this town. I'd spent time with Dalton in my admission interviews and then over 12 hours of travel together, yet I had no idea what to make of him. There was so much about Dalton that reminded me of the worst kind of cops, swaggering through life, a bully with a badge. He seemed to fit that slot. And then he'd do something to pop him out of it. That was uncomfortable. I met Anders briefly, and he seemed more my kind of colleague, competent and personable. But after maybe 5 minutes in Rockton, they'd both had to rush off to an emergency, and I had made my way to town alone.
Go in the back door of the station. Stay there. If anyone comes into the office, tell them to come back when we return.
Those were Dalton's orders, which seemed a little disconcerting, as if the locals were wolves who might pick me off while the Alpha was away. It was Kenny who came into the station. As I discovered later, a bunch of the militia guys had drawn straws to see who got to introduce himself to the new girl first. That's what I'd been to them. Not their new superior officer. Not the new detective. A new woman in town. An addition to Rockton's meager dating pool. Kenny had exactly 2 minutes with me before Isabel showed up and shooed him off. I remember her asking if I could guess what he'd done in his former life. Given the size of his biceps and the perfume of sawdust, I'd guessed carpenter or construction worker. High school math teacher, she said. When he arrived 18 months ago, he'd never have worked up the courage to talk to you. People come here and it's a clean slate, a chance to be whoever they want for a while. What Kenny wanted to be was one of the cool kids. For a guy like him, cool meant tough. Except he lacked that edge and wasn't terribly invested in finding it. So he settled for hitting the gym and joining the militia. He became the guy he wanted to be. And now he'd been about to leave his new life. Had he panicked at that? Worried he'd end up back in a job he'd hate because his new skills wouldn't pay the bills? Had he been an easy target for Oliver Brady? I desperately want to say no, but the evidence must be acknowledged. When we walk in to question Kenny, the first thing he says isn't, "I didn't do it," or, "Guys, come on, you know me."
"I know how bad this looks."
"Good,"
Dalton says. We pull up chairs outside the cell. Kenny has one inside. We've granted him that, in recognition that he's had to wait a very long time for this interview. "Your knife was found with the prisoner," I begin. He starts to speak, but Dalton says,
"Be quiet and listen."
"Brady used that knife to cut his bindings," I continue. "He used it to take Val captive. You were his guard at the time, and you were in charge of the guarding schedule."
A
look from Dalton silences him again. "You assigned yourself to that time slot. You abandoned your post. The prisoner was left unguarded, with a weapon, while a fire brought everyone else running. A fire set in the lumber shed, which you know very well. It was a delayed start fire, giving you time to go on guard duty." You brought Brady his breakfast. You offered to bring it. We realize now that it was poisoned, not to kill him, but to get him out of that cell. So Brady's in the clinic with his wrists tied and under guard. Fire breaks out. Everyone runs, including his guard. He is left with a knife and the perfect hostage. He slouches in his seat.
"Shit. I'm not even sure where to start."
"Well, that depends,"
Dalton says.
"If you'd like, you can start with explaining why you were the one bringing that food tray."
"I took it from someone. She was in a hurry and complaining about her workload, and I wanted to be nice."
He lowers his voice to a mutter.
"Even if she'd never do the same in return."
"Jen," I say.
"I'd rather not name names."
"You have to,"
Dalton says.
"But in this case, you don't need to. That description says it all."
"So you volunteered to take the tray," I say. "Then you volunteered for guard duty at the clinic." He shakes his head.
"I was scheduled for guard duty with Brady here at the station. Will asked me to make up a 24-hour schedule, with me and Sam alternating 4-hour shifts. Will picked us two for it."
He pauses and then hurries to add, "Which made sense. Paul's in the doghouse right now, and Will wanted his best two guys. His two most experienced. That'd be me and Sam." "And the knife?" I say.
"After I offered to help you open that can, someone asked to borrow it, and I said, sure, just leave it on the sawhorse when you're done. When I went back to get it, it wasn't there."
"Who borrowed it?"
"I'm not even sure. I was cutting wood, and someone asked behind me. I never turned around. I barely heard him over the saw."
"Tell me about leaving your post."
I heard the bell. I went outside, and someone said it was a fire. I ran back in. Brady was sound asleep. Val was doing one of her algebra puzzles. I talked to her earlier about it, said I remembered giving those to my students. She assured me this one was much more advanced. An eye roll and a slight smile. You know Val. Anyway, when I came in, she was absorbed in that. I said there was a fire at the shed and I should go, and she said, yes, yes. Those were her exact words. Yes, yes. She never even looked up. I double-checked Brady's restraints and told Val I'd send someone to take my place. And then I saw you coming, Casey, so I thought it was covered. Kenny shakes his head. I made a mistake. A big one. But my mistake was leaving my post. Not helping Brady escape. I'd never do that. Chapter 28. We place Kenny under Dalton's version of work release. He'll do the lumber shed repairs during the day and spend his nights in Brady's new residence, as we give his cell to Roy instead. As for our suspicions with Kenny, we will say nothing to the council. As far as they'll know, we are punishing him for letting Brady escape on his watch. Kenny will be leaving as soon as this is over, and we will let him go, even if that means he's going to collect a reward down south for helping Brady. Otherwise, if the council knows, we cannot trust he'll survive the trip south. And whatever mistake he's made, it doesn't deserve the death penalty. We spend the next day combing the forest for Val and Jacob. Dalton's trying not to freak out about that. There is no sign that anything has happened to his brother, and this is how Jacob lives. He moves with game in the seasons and whatever whim strikes him. Jacob's life, though, means Dalton can't pick up a phone and call to warn him about Brady. Jacob comes and goes, and that stresses his brother out at the best of times. The fact we can't find him means absolutely nothing. It's just driving Dalton crazy. We take an ATV out the next morning. We have three of them. Two smaller ones that can take a passenger on the back, and a side-by-side that only travels on the widest trails. I've been trying to talk Dalton into dirt bikes for getting deeper into the forest. In fact, when the council told us we'd get a windfall from Brady, that's what Dalton said to me, trying to find an upside.
We'll get a couple of those bikes you've been talking about.
Which apparently isn't happening now. We're riding one of the smaller ATVs. I'm on the back. We'll switch at some point. Dalton knows there's no way I'm taking the bitch seat for the whole trip. Storm runs along behind us. We aren't going that fast, and we don't really have a destination in mind. We're just covering ground and making a lot of noise doing it, in hopes that if Jacob is around, he'll pop out. Or that Val will come stumbling from the forest, having been abandoned by Brady 3 days ago. We're zipping along a straightaway. I have my visor open as I scan the forest. Dalton's turning to say something, just as a massive, shaggy shape tromps onto the path. Bear! I yell. Dalton hits the brake. The figure in front of us shouts,
Bear? Do I look like a fucking bear?
The man is over 6 feet tall, massive shoulders, grizzled shaggy hair and beard, dressed in a brown jacket that he's pieced together from skins and fur. A fucking bear? No, I say as I hop off the ATV. A standing one? Absolutely.
Ha!
Cipher jabs a finger my way and says to Dalton,
See, boy, that is what we call a sense of humor.
You get our note?
Dalton says.
Good to see you too,
Cipher says as he bends to pet the dog.
I'm fine. Thank you for asking. Weather's been clear. Hunting's good.
We have a problem.
Cipher plunks his ass down right on the path and then pulls a kerchief full of jerky from his jacket. One piece goes to Storm. He holds out another for me.
I said,
Dalton begins,
that you have a problem. I was hoping you'd say something new and original. You want to know how to solve your endless problems? Take your girl here and leave that piece of shit town.
I did not get your note. I haven't been to the cabin in days. I heard the ATV and thought I'd say hi.
beginning to regret that.
Brent's dead,
Dalton says. Cipher stops. He looks at me as if checking whether he's heard wrong. He was shot by a prisoner who escaped from Rockton, I say. Gut shot. We found him the next morning. He lived long enough to confirm who killed him.
Fuck.
A moment's pause. Then,
fuck.
Another pause. This one followed by a knitting of his brows as he looks up.
Did you say prisoner?
When we finish explaining, he says,
you let the fucking council?
We didn't let them do anything, I cut in. You know how it works.
Yeah, which is why I got the hell out of Dodge. You couldn't stop them from dropping off that guy, but you didn't need to accept the delivery.
Yeah,
Dalton says.
Could have just left him there a few hundred feet from town. A guy who tortures people to death for fun. What could possibly go wrong?
Okay, fine. You had to take him. On to the back of your ATV there, and then head to the swamp and dump his ass. I'd give him 3 days. If swamp fever doesn't kill him, the mosquitoes will.
When we don't answer, he looks from me to Dalton.
Fuck no. Do not tell me this guy said he was innocent. No? Scratch that. Of course he told you that. The fuck no is fuck no. Tell me you didn't consider the possibility. Well, I guess you know better now.
Because you ran? Dalton says.
Yeah. If I was brought up here, held prisoner for crimes I didn't commit, I'd just plop my ass down, like you, on this damn path and sit it out.
My ass is on the damn path because I'm tired. So's your puppy. I'm resting for her.
We entertain doubts about his guilt, I say. Those doubts had no impact on our treatment of him.
Except that they kept you from dumping him in the swamp, or taking him behind the hangar and putting a bullet through his skull. That's why you're in this situation, kids. You don't have what it takes to run that town properly.
No, we don't have what it takes to be run out of that town, I say. If we killed Brady, the council would have put Eric on the next plane out.
Not if you did it right. Hire an expert. I'd have taken him out cheap. You could even blame me if you wanted. We took that kid for a walk, and Ty Cipher came roaring out of the forest. You know what he's like? Fucking certifiable. Dragged the poor kid off, and a hail of bullets couldn't stop him.
What we should have done doesn't matter, I say. The point is that he's out there, and he took Val, and he killed Brent, and I don't care if that wasn't what he had in mind. If I see him, there will be a hail of bullets. Our priority right now is twofold. Find Val and warn Jacob.
Well, I can't help you with the first. If I'd seen a lady out here, I'd have noticed. I'd have come to her rescue right quick, hoping she'd have been grateful.
Uh-huh.
Don't give me that look, girlie. I mean I'd have hoped for a reward of the material variety. I'm not a perv.
Didn't you tell me that you came to Rockton because you slept with a mark instead of killing her? And you slept with her because she was grateful for your warning?
Which means I have learned my lesson about gratitude. It is safer in tangible form. However, I can help you with Jakey. Saw him yesterday morning carving up a bull caribou over by Elk Ridge. He let me have the heart. I am very fond of hearts. Build strength.
You ate a raw caribou heart.
Fuck no. I cooked it.
A grunt as he hefts himself to his feet and hands Dalton the last piece of jerky.
I'll take you to the site. You gotta leave the wheels, though. I'm too old to run behind it with the dog.
You need more caribou hearts, I say.
Evidently.
Chapter 29. Dalton is calmer now. Cipher has seen Jacob, and he's doing exactly what Brent said, which explains why he left his last camp and why he hasn't been easy to find. Elk Ridge is north, and we haven't searched in that direction. Brady will head south to find civilization. Actually, the nearest village is west, but he doesn't know that. South makes sense. North does not. We hide the ATV. It wouldn't have done us any good anyway. The fastest trail to Elk Ridge isn't more than a footpath, soon cutting through sheer rock. As we walk, Storm has a blast, tramping through the mountain streams.
I want a dog,
Cypher muses as she whips past, water droplets flying. Well, we do find ourselves in possession of a very young wolf dog cub, I say. His mother seemed like she might have been rabid, and the cub bit Dalton, so we're holding him under quarantine. He glances at Dalton.
Doesn't look like he's quarantined.
I roll my eyes. The cub.
It's not rabies, anyway. Never seen that in all my years up here.
He walks a few more steps.
Wolf dog, you say? How much of each you figure?
More wolf than dog. Just your style. He gives me a hard look.
Do I strike you as an idiot? Only a fool thinks he can domesticate a wolf. You should give him to your boyfriend there. Seems his style. Raised by wolves, weren't you, boy?
Dalton ignores him.
If there's a decent amount of dog in the pup, you might be okay,
Cypher says.
Too much work for me. But at least dogs are domestic animals. Wolves aren't. Can't be. They probably can be, Dalton says. The root genus is the same. The question is time frame. It takes generations. You letting him read again, kitten?
Dalton continues.
There was an interesting study using silver foxes in Siberia. They keep breeding them with human contact. After 40 generations, they had domesticated foxes. That's 40 generations. Going in reverse, with dog DNA already in the cub, it should be easier. You still have the wolf to contend with, though. The question would be mostly one of dominance, not domestication so much as establishing a leadership position. I like you better when you act stupid, boy. I like you better when you don't. Who says I'm acting? You keep your wolf dog. Getting too old for that dominant shit. Had that already with a dog like yours. Bull Mastiff. Took it in partial trade on a job. I liked the dog. Didn't like the way its master was treating it. The guy figured he'd beat the dog into submission. So, I persuaded him to part with the beast. Uh-huh. It was a civil conversation. I asked nicely. The guy laughed, said the dog was a fucking purebred. Too rich for my blood. So, I asked again, said he could take 500 off my pay. He agreed. Well, he nodded. Had some trouble talking, dangling 2 feet off the floor with my arm crushing his windpipe.
You're very persuasive.
You have no idea, kitten. He looks at Dalton. I want a dog. You got this fancy purebred for your girl. I don't need anything that nice, but I don't want some mangy mutt either. If I find this Brady guy and take him off your hands, I get a dog, okay? If you find Val, you get a dog, Dalton says. After Brent, the other bastard can die out here, if he hasn't already.
Cypher keeps us entertained on the walk, or I'm entertained. When it comes to Tyrone Cypher, I can never tell how Dalton feels. If asked, he grumbles and rolls his eyes and grumbles some more. I believe he sees Cypher the same way one might view the grizzly the big man resembles. Potentially dangerous, potentially useful, trustworthy enough if you know how to approach him, but really, you should probably avoid it if you can. I like Cypher, but I respect Dalton's wariness. Cypher is the only person here who knew Dalton when he was brought to Rockton. When we first met, Cypher mocked Dalton by calling him Jungle Boy and making his raised by wolves jabs. Having gotten to know the man better, I think he was teasing. But those jabs cut deep. Dalton might not be that boy anymore, and he was never the half-wild savage Cypher claims, but he feels like he was, like he still is in some ways, and that's the sharpest needle you can dig into someone, piercing straight into their best hidden insecurities. There's more to it, too. I've never met Gene Dalton, the former sheriff, but I used to presume Dalton inherited his persona from him. The profanity, the swagger, the creative punishments. A hard-assed sheriff routine that is 50% genuine and 50% bullshit. Then I met Cypher, and I realized it wasn't Gene Dalton the boy from the woods had admired and emulated. That boy wouldn't have necessarily admired the man I've since realized Gene is. Quiet, thoughtful, fair, and reasoned. No. If that boy was going to look up to someone, it'd be Cypher. Larger than life. Everyone scurrying from his path. A man both feared and respected. The problem is that Dalton didn't stay a boy. He grew into a man who sees Cypher's shortcomings, who realizes Cypher was more feared than respected, and that maybe he enjoyed meting out his creative punishments a little too much. But the die had been cast. Dalton still subconsciously emulates his first role model. We're nearing Jacob's camp.
"He should be here," Cypher says. "When I talked to him yesterday, he said he wanted to finish butchering the caribou. If he's gone, he won't be far." "Jake!" Cypher booms. "Yo, Jakey!"
There's a sound from up ahead, and through the trees I make out the side of a hide tent. Another sound comes, a grunt, and Dalton's arm shoots up to stop me. Cypher swears under his breath. Storm catches a smell in the air, and her fur rises as I grab for her collar. Dalton pulls back a branch.
"And that, kitten, is a bear," Cypher whispers.
It is indeed, and it's right there, next to Jacob's tent, ripping through a pack on the ground. It's not a grizzly, which is some relief. It's a big black, though. A boar in his prime, maybe 300 pounds. When he stands to sniff the air, he stretches to my height. I cast a quick look around the camp. There's no sign of Jacob, and I exhale. While black bears aren't nearly as dangerous as browns, they can kill if provoked. Jacob knows better than to provoke one. Cypher, on the other hand...
"You got a clear shot at it, kitten?"
he asks. "Only if it attacks," I say.
"If you've got a clear shot, take it."
"No,"
Dalton says.
"She won't. We can't skin it here, so we're not taking it down unless we have to."
"Fuck. Don't tell me you're one of those. Don't like killing things unless they need killing."
"Weird, I know," I say.
"Life's a whole lot less dangerous if you just take out everything in your path. Kill or be killed. It's the way of the jungle."
"We're not in the jungle," Dalton says.
"This is boreal forest."
"Stop reading, okay? Just stop." Cypher sighs.
"Fine. So how you want to do this, nature boy? Ask the bear if we may approach?" "We're gonna spook it. Casey can cover..."
Storm growls.
"I think your pup wants in on the fun," Cypher says.
Storm growls louder. She's straining at my grip, every hair on her body raised, head lowered. The bear rears up again and looks our way.
"Fuck," Cypher says. "Can we shoot it now?"
"Well, that depends," Dalton says. "Unless you've actually learned to aim a gun, you'd have to hold the dog while Casey shoots. And pray that Casey's 9mm will take the bear down in one shot from this distance."
"You've got a .357. I'm left-handed."
Cypher glances at the sling on Dalton's left arm.
"Can't just be right-handed like normal people. Fucking inconvenient you are."
"Eric," I say, "as fun as this debate is, I'm going to backstorm up before that bear decides to charge. Ty, take my gun. Eric, if you need to shoot even with your right, you'll probably do better than him."
"Guns are unsporting," Cypher says. "I fight with my hands."
"You do that then, and I'll keep my gun."
"I'd rather you kept it anyway," Dalton says.
I start backing Storm up. It's a tug of war, but she allows me to inch her away. Dalton lopes off to the side, making just enough noise to pull the bear's attention. I continue backing off until we've lost sight of them, and that's when Storm finally settles. She grumbles and grunts, not unlike a bear herself, her shaggy head turning from side to side as she sniffs the air. I manage to get her lying down and park my butt on top of her. I hear a, "Hi,
hi!"
from the camp. That's Dalton. Cypher uses more colorful language to convince the bear it's time to go. Both crash through the undergrowth, making as much noise as they can. When a shot fires, I tense and Storm whines, but it's a warning shot, followed by crashes heading the other way and accompanied by the grunts of a fleeing bear.
Casey, Dalton calls.
Right here.
He's taken off. We're going to check out the camp. Are you okay where you are?
I am.
Then stay there with Storm in case the bear circles back.
Got it. I listen to the forest, gun in hand, but all I can hear is the rustle and murmured talk of the men at Jacob's campsite. And then Storm leaps up, toppling me off her, and by the time I realize what's happened, she's a black blur disappearing into the forest. I race after her. It happens so fast that I presume she's heading for the campsite, and I'm not too concerned about that. Then I realize we're heading in the opposite direction. I should have shouted. If I'd even just yelled for Storm, Dalton would have heard it. I do now. I call for her, and I call for him, but I'm still running, stumbling through thick undergrowth, and I can tell my voice isn't loud enough to carry back to Dalton. But I cannot stop, because in that moment, I am absolutely certain that if I do not catch Storm, I've lost her. She's running, and I see her, and as long as I can do that, I still have her. I stop shouting for Dalton, and call to her instead. Storm! Get back here! Stop! Come! Wait! It's too many commands. I know that. I'm panicking and shouting whatever comes to mind, and she is not stopping. God damn it, she is not stopping. I should have her on a leash. She isn't ready for this. Not well enough trained, and my hubris has failed her. The ground opens up as we veer toward the mountain base. I can see her easily now, bounding over the rock. She's chasing something. I catch a glimpse of brown fur. Tawny. A deer? It leaps over rock, and as it jumps onto one, I see that it's not a deer. Chapter 30. When I realize what Storm is chasing, I scream at her. Stop! Storm! Stop now! She just keeps bounding after a massive, tawny, brown cat. A mountain lion. Stop! Please, 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 baby, stop! She does not stop. Does not seem to hear me. She scrambles over the rocks, letting out a happy bark as she closes in on her quarry. Quarry? No. Storm has no sense of other animals as prey. We have not taught her that. We should have taught her that. We didn't get her as a hunting dog, and we don't want her chasing down animals. She's had exposure to many. Foxes, deer, rabbits. But they aren't prey. They're chase toys. They run, and she pursues until they take over, and she loses the game. She's never caught anything bigger than a mouse that she once surprised, and then she just tossed it about until we got it away from her. In failing to teach her, I have been in my way like my parents, failing to prepare me for life's dangers. Because what she is chasing right now is not a chase toy. It will not take cover. It is a predator, and when it turns on her, she will not flee. She will not attack. She'll think the game has taken an exciting new twist. Not a chase toy, but a playmate. An animal her own size who is turning around to say, "Tag, you're it," like her human playmates do. I'm screaming at her, and I know she can't hear me. There's a sharp wind coming off the mountain, blowing my shouts away. I'm not even sure she'd hear me without that. Her ears are filled with the pound of her oversized paws and the heave of her panting breaths and the thump of her adrenaline-charged heartbeat. I have my gun out. I've had it ready since I realized what Storm is chasing. But I can't get a shot. She's too close to the big cat. The cat is drawing her into its territory, its comfort zone. Cougars are death from above. The silent plunge from a tree or a rocky overhang. A dead weight thump on your back. Powerful jaws clamping around your neck. Spinal cord severed. You're dead before you hit the ground. This cougar is luring Storm in. It will make one incredible leap onto a rock. A leap that requires feline hindquarters and will leave the canine scrambling at the base. Then it will pounce. And that will be my chance. I'll see it spring onto that rock where storm cannot follow, and when the big cat turns around, I will shoot. I will empty my goddamn gun if I have to. We're scrambling up the mountainside. The cougar looks back a couple of times, obviously shocked that such a massive canine is keeping up. Storm is big, but she's young and agile, not yet the lumbering Newfoundland she'll become. The cat veers suddenly. I see where it's going. The perfect overhang. But it is miscalculated. That rock is at least 20 feet above the path. The cougar can't possibly make the leap. Yet, it intends to try. Still running, it hunkers low, gaze fixed on that spot. It slows, and Storm is gaining, and oh, shit, no. Storm is gaining, and the cat will realize it can't make that jump. Storm will leap, and the cougar jumps. I see it crouch, see its hind muscles bunch, see it spring, and as terrified as I am for Storm, I cannot help but mentally freeze frame the sight, awed by the beauty and perfection of that huge cat in flight. It lands squarely on the ledge. The shock of that freezes me again. Then the cat disappears, turning around, and I jolt from my surprise to remember my shot. I raise the gun and look down the sights. The moment the cat appears, I will fire. At the base of the overhang, Storm barks, jumping and twisting as if she can reach it. The cat's ears appear first. Tawny, black-rimmed ears. Then the top of its head. Dark line down the middle. Perpendicular dark slash over each eye. When the pink nose emerges, I start to squeeze the trigger. A chest shot would be better. But any shot at all should spook it, and if it runs the other way instead of pouncing, Storm will be safe. Stuck below, Storm gives one last bark and tears off. I glance away from the gun just in time to see her racing along the rock, looking for another way up. Damn it! This is one time when I really wish I had a dumber dog. Storm! I call. She has to hear me now. The cougar does. Its gaze swings my way, and I'm close enough to see those amber irises. Close enough to make eye contact and feel a stab of regret and a hope that my bullet will miss, and the big cat will be frightened off. Another bark. The sound of paws scrabbling on rocky ground. The sound of paws finding purchase, finding a path, pounding up the mountainside. Shit! The cougar's head disappears. I fire anyway. Fire and hope the sound will send it running. But I only take that one shot, and then I'm running, tearing in the direction Storm went. I can see her, black against the gray rock, making her way up the mountainside, determined to win this game of catch me. Storm! I call as I run. She hears me then, looks back and gives a happy bark. Mom's playing too! This is awesome! Storm, come! I stop myself. Focus. Breathe. I'm cold with panic. Literally icy with it. Cold sweat dripping down my face as I shiver. Each breath scorching my lungs, my heart pounding so hard my vision clouds. This is terror. Like seeing that sniper in the tree. Dalton lunging. Dalton falling. But that was a mere second of panic. The thin space between seeing him fall and seeing him alive and breathing. This seems to go on forever. When I saw what Storm was chasing, I knew she could die. I realized death was a very real possibility, and maybe even a probability, and it was all my fault. She trusted me, and I should have known better, and who the fuck was I to think I could protect anything? I have never in my life been able to do that. I've spent years barely able to keep myself moving forward. Don't rely on me. Just don't. I will do what I can, everything I can, but please do not rely on me. Do not give me that responsibility. I will fail. I am about to fail. Stop. Focus. I have one last chance. Storm can hear me, and any moment now, that cougar will appear and leap from a rock I can't even see down here. Storm? Stop! I don't shout it. I say it. Loud. Firm. Angry even. Let her know I'm angry. That is the key here. She doesn't understand fear. She doesn't understand shrieking panic. That is not the language I have taught her.
Storm! Stop!
She skids to a halt and glances over her shoulder, and in her eyes I see confusion. Hurt and confusion.
Storm! Stay! Storm? Bad girl!
Her ears droop at that, muzzle dipping. She knows she has misbehaved, knows she has run from me. I must use that.
Storm, come.
I'm still walking as I extend my hand, reaching for her, my gaze on the rocks above. She's almost to me when I see a flash of tawny fur. That's all I see, a blur, as the cougar leaps and... Shit! Oh, shit, no. The big cat is in flight, dropping toward Storm, who is making her way slowly to me, her head and tail down. I fire. Shot after shot, I fire as the cougar is in flight. The big cat jerks. Bullets ripping through its underside in a burst of blood, but it is still falling, still on trajectory to hit Storm.
Storm!
I yell. And that only confuses her, and she slows, her head lifting. The cougar lands square on Storm's back, and I'm flying forward. A voice in my head shouts for me to stop. Just stop. It's Dalton's voice, not mine. Mine is silent, accepting, and I'm sailing at the cougar, gun dropped, hands out as if I can physically wrench the big cat off Storm. The dog bucks, her eyes rolling in terror. The cougar's jaws open. I hit it, both hands slamming into its side. One massive fang slices into Storm's shoulder, slices in and rips as the big cat falls. I'm on it then, and a memory flashes. Cipher telling me he wanted me to teach him Aikido, so he could take down the man-eating cougar out here. I remember rolling my eyes at that. He was joking, had to be joking. No one would attempt anything so stupid. I'm falling. My hands wrapped in brown fur, fur slick with blood, blood pumping from multiple shots in the cougar's white underbelly. We go down, and I'm atop the big cat, and all I can think is, what the hell are you gonna do? Wrestle it to death? I grab for my knife. I'm still pulling it out as we roll, and I rear up, knife raised. The cougar stays on the ground. I'm poised there, adrenaline pounding. The big cat lies on its side, flanks heaving, blood pumping from the bullet wounds. The cat's mouth opens, and it is breathing hard. Its eye rolls to look at me, and in it, I see a look I know well, from Storm when she's injured. I don't understand. I hurt, and I don't understand. Storm moves up beside me. Blood seeps from her shoulder, but she's walking fine. She sniffs the cat's injured belly and whines. Then she lowers herself at my side and lays her big muzzle on my foot as she watches the cat. I tentatively reach out and place my hand on the cougar's shoulder. That amber eye meets mine. But the cat just keeps breathing hard, gasping for air. Dying. When I shot Blaine, I saw him die. It took only a moment, but I had to watch it. The outrage, the anger, the disbelief. While he had not deserved what I did, he was not blameless. The punishment simply did not fit the magnitude of his crimes. This cougar is blameless. It ran from a predator. It tried to stop a threat. It did what it needed to survive. And I shot it, emptied my gun into it. It's a young cougar. I see that now. A male, the size of Storm, which means it isn't more than a couple of years old. One of the man-eater's cubs. A beautiful creature, covered in blood, dying and confused. Storm whimpers, and I know I have to tend to her, but I can't leave the cat to die alone. Maybe that's overly sentimental, but I feel I owe it something. No, I know what I owe it. The question is whether I can do it. I don't want to. I have to. It is gut shot, like Brent. And if I walk away, it will lie here for hours, slowly dying. I steady my knife. Then, with my left hand, I rub the fur behind its ears. I half expect it to snarl, to tense. But that eye closes and the big cat relaxes under my fingers. I grip the knife firmly in my right hand, find its jugular, and slice as quickly as I can. The cat's eye flies open, but it doesn't lift its head. With the pain from its stomach, it barely notices the cut. I keep rubbing its head, and that eye closes, and after a moment, the cougar goes still. Chapter 31. I take only a second to regroup. Then I'm checking Storm's shoulder. There's a gash where the cougar's fang pierced and then sliced, and that, too, is my fault. I'd hit the cat as the fang caught. Of course, if I hadn't hit, all four canines would have ripped out the back of Storm's neck. But I'm good at taking blame. 2 seconds faster, and I could have saved her from any injury at all. I have a rudimentary first aid kit on my equipment belt. When I was a constable, I hated the equipment belt. Gun, baton, radio, cuffs, flashlight. The damn thing weighed 15 pounds, and I consider myself in good shape. Need to be in my profession. But I was still half the size of my partners, and my belt was just as heavy as theirs. I would long for the day when I could trade my belt for a shield. It came quickly. My education fast-tracked me to detective, but I still remember the damn belt. Now I must wear one again, and I'm fine with that. I've actually added items to what Dalton considers essential for venturing into the wilderness. The mini first aid kit is one of my extras. God knows we need it often enough. I clean and suture Storm's shoulder. She is remarkably good about that. Part of it is that she's been stitched before, more because her owners are anxious new parents than because her wounds actually required stitches. I suspect her stillness is also because she knows she's in trouble. And part is, I fear, shock. Shock that this beast hurt her. Shock that her attacker now lies warm and motionless and bloody on the ground. I don't understand. I hurt, and I don't understand. I rub her ears and pet her and talk to her. She nudges the cougar a few times, as if seeing whether it will rise. Nudges, sniffs, lies down with her head on its foreleg and sighs. I'll come back for the cougar's hide. While that sounds callous, it is the opposite. I don't want this hide. I want to say it's ruined and leave it here. But only the belly is shot, and this is what Dalton has taught me, that if we must put down a wild animal and there is any use to be made of its remains, then we must do that. Leaving it to rot is a last resort when, as with the mother wolf dog, there is nothing to be taken. I heave to my feet, and maybe I'm in a bit of shock myself, because it's only then that I think, oh shit, Dalton! In everything that has happened, I've forgotten how it started. That Dalton and Cipher were checking Jacob's campsite while Storm bolted, and Dalton never realized I'd taken off. He certainly realized it by now. I need to get back to him. I look around and... which way is back? Down the mountainside? I know that much. But from there? I ran after Storm, focused only on her, paying no attention to my surroundings. Shit! No, I'm fine. There's a damn mountain here, a massive landmark. I know Jacob's encampment was near the base. It's just a matter of orienting myself. I tell Storm to stay. She doesn't appreciate that, but when I insist, she wisely decides she has disobeyed me enough for one day, and she plunks down with only a grumble. I climb up to where the cougar had leapt from. I walk to the edge and look out to see forest. Endless miles of forest. Eric! I shout. My voice echoes over the woods below. I scan for any sign of Jacob's campsite, of Dalton, of Cipher, of anything that doesn't belong in this forest. I see trees. Lots and lots of trees. Forget landmarks, then. I know I am on the proper side of the mountain. We approached from the south, to the southeast side of Hawk Peak, so called because it resembles a hawk's head with a jutting rock for a beak. The problem? From where I stand, I can't tell if I'm on Hawk Peak. I'm too close to see the rock formation. If this is Hawk, then I should be able to see a smaller, unnamed peak to the east, and I do see rock to the east. Is it the smaller peak, or just rock? Damn it! I'm just too close to judge. I know my way home. That is the main thing. The problem is that Dalton won't go home until he's found me. I see a stream below, possibly a small river. I didn't cross one, but I do recall running through marshy land. There's mud on my boots, so that seems to be the generally correct direction. I unwind a strip of bright yellow cloth from my belt. Last winter, I got lost in the woods during a snowstorm, and I'd been grateful for a particularly ugly scarf Anders gave me. So Dalton now insists everyone carry a strip of bright fabric. I fasten it to this rocky ledge to mark the spot where I've left the cougar. I also attach a note for Dalton. We're fine. I'm going to try to find the campsite again. If you aren't there, I'm heading for the ATV. I know where I am. I won't wander. Except, of course, I have already wandered, and by saying I know where I am, I mean only the rough geographic area. Rockton encompasses about 15 acres. It seems a huge and exposed parcel of land, but it is tiny in this massive forest. It isn't as if I can just keep heading in a compass direction and not miss it. I won't worry about that. I have my gun and extra ammo. I have energy bars. There's plenty of fresh water. It's good weather. Storm and I will be fine. This is the mantra I repeat to myself as I make my way back to my dog. She's where I left her. I give her a strip of dried meat and a pat, and we set out. I watch her movement. Going downhill isn't easy with her shoulder. She takes it slow, growling now and then as if frustrated by the impediment. I know exactly how she feels. I do the same, as old injuries in my leg protest the steep downward climb. As we near the base, I know this isn't the spot we went up. It's too steep. I'm looking for an easier route down when Storm goes on full alert. She starts to whine, her tail wagging. Eric? I ask her. Her whole body quivers as she dances from paw to paw, her nose raised to catch a scent. I say, Eric? Again, to be sure. She whines louder, giving me this look as if to say, well, obviously, what are we waiting for? Slow, I say. She bounds forward. I call, slow! And she gives me a reproachful glance as she takes it down to a walk. We make our way down the steep incline. I hope it's Dalton she smells. Names are something she's learned only from general usage. If I say, where's Eric? She'll look for him. And one of Dalton's favorite games is to hear me coming up the steps and hold the door closed, saying to Storm,
is that Casey? No, I don't think that's Casey. Are you sure it's Casey?
Well, the poor puppy goes nuts. I've said one of these days she's just going to get fed up and bite him, and I won't blame her. If she doesn't, I will, especially if he's holding the door shut when it's 30 below. I test Storm, saying, is that Eric? As we walk, but that only makes her pick up speed, leaving me stumbling over rocky ground to keep up. I quit that before I lose her again. Another thing to add to my duty belt. Nylon rope for a temporary lead. I search for something else to use, but I'm not wearing a regular belt, and I have gauze pads, not strips. So I just keep calling, slow, when she bounds ahead. And then I get those looks. Like she's humoring Granny with a bad hip. We're definitely not going the same way we came in. I try not to worry about that. I still have my landmarks, and Storm is on a scent that is almost certainly Dalton's. When I hear something in the trees ahead, I call, Eric? Tyrone? And the long muzzle of a caribou rises from a grassy patch. The caribou sees us. Storm sees it. Stop! I say. Wrong move. The sudden shout sends the doe running, crashing through the trees. I dive for Storm, and I land on her, my hands gripping her collar. But she hasn't moved. She's quaking, watching that fleeing caribou as if fighting the urge to turn tail and run. The memory of the cougar still fresh. I pet her and tell her it's fine, and I'm fretting about that, whether one bad encounter will now have her terrified of every creature in the forest. But as the caribou bounds off, Storm's shaking turns to another kind of quivering. The kind that says she wants to give chase, and it's a good thing I have both hands on her collar and my dead weight holding her back. The surge of fear has passed, and now all she sees is yet another fleeing play toy. I sigh, shake my head, and say, "Stay, stay." And then I'm the one fighting an urge. A horrible urge to touch her shoulder. That raw line of stitches. A quick jolt of pain to remind her why she cannot chase things in the forest. I feel sick even thinking it. Here I was worrying that this bad experience will traumatize her, and then I'm struggling against the urge to reinforce that? I finger a tiny scar on my jawbone. Compared to all the other scars on my body, this one is invisible. But for so much of my life, it was the scar. A permanent reminder that I had disobeyed my parents, and this was the price I'd paid. That my face would never be perfect again. I got the scar rollerblading. I wasn't allowed to rollerblade, of course. Looking back, I'm surprised my parents let me own a bicycle. But I'd been at a friend's place and borrowed her blades, despite knowing I wasn't allowed. I'd fallen, and this scar, maybe a half inch long, was the result. After that, whenever I complained about not being allowed to do something, my mother would take out her compact mirror and hold it up for me, and I knew what that meant. Remember the scar. In my head, a barely noticeable blemish became hideously disfiguring. A guy I dated a few times in high school touched it once when we were sitting on the curb, and he told me it was cute, kind of cool and badass. I dumped him after that, convinced he'd been mocking me. As a child, though, when my mother showed me that mirror, I never felt angry at the reminder. It meant she loved me. It was the only way I knew my parents did. They might not hug or kiss me or call me endearments, but they cared about my safety. Now, as an adult, I'm not sure that was love at all. And yet, when I feel that urge to touch Storm's wound as she watches the fleeing caribou, that is what goes through my head. I will touch it and remind her of the danger because I want her to be safe. That is love. I swallow hard and squeeze my eyes shut. That's not me. That will never be me. But even knowing I'd never do it, the urge still hurts. And on the heels of that comes the reminder that maybe it's a good thing my attack meant I can probably never have kids. I have no experience of how to be a proper parent, and so perhaps it's a decision that should be taken out of my hands. I shake off the thought. Clearly not appropriate, much less helpful at this moment. Storm twists and licks my face, whining softly. "Sorry," I murmur, giving her a pat. "Let's get on with it. Take me to Eric. That's who you smelled, right? Eric?" Her tail thumps, and I nod, relieved that it wasn't the caribou. I carefully release her, ready to lunge and grab her back, but she stays at my side for a few steps before venturing into the lead again. As she walks, she lifts her muzzle to catch the breeze, snuffling it, and I call, "Eric!" each time to reinforce that's who we're looking for. There's no sign or sound of him, though, and I'm getting nervous. Nothing here is familiar, and there's no way to be sure he is what Storm's tracking. We just seem to be wandering deeper into the forest. When a distant sound catches my ear, I home in on it, thinking, "Eric." It's not the sound of people, though. It's water. The rushing water of the river I'd seen from the ledge. Good. I'm on target. We'll go another couple of hundred steps, and if Storm doesn't track down Dalton, we'll swing east and try to find our way back to Jacob's camp. Storm gives a happy bark and looks at me, tail wagging. "You smell Eric?" I say. She whines and dances. I smile.